Welcome to episode 273 of The Lab. I'm Brad Barton.
I'm Phil Barton.
This is one in a short series on computers, computing, and the history thereof. To find the other episodes, you can visit thelabwithbrad.com.
Computers.
Again with the mm-hmm. You know, last time you made the extra noise and I mentioned it.
So excited about
it. But it got entirely lost in the theme song anyway, so.
Oh.
But, you know, this time I'll bump you up. People will hear you. Mm-hmm.
It's all I can do is support. Mm,
computers and computing. Oh, my goodness.
Where are we?
Well, we left off with the fall of Constantinople.
Oh, right? Yeah.
But I need to back up a little bit, all the way back to prehistory again.
Wait. I know we were done. Okay. All right.
No, this will be quick. Okay. Stars.
Yay.
Right. People who live in urban areas aren't necessarily quite aware of the impact the night sky had on the primitive psyche.
Oh, yeah.
Or even your psyche. Go do yourself a favor someday and go camping in the mountains somewhere far away from light.
Which is tough to do, actually.
Yes.
Yeah. But
and getting harder all the time.
Yeah.
And just take a gander at the vista, as it were. And I have lost all of my vision at this point. This is one of my treasured memories, or several of them, when I got to see the night sky laid out, even for an almost blind guy.
Yeah.
But people noticed that as the sun and the moon went through their cycles and the planets drifted through stars and so forth, certain things would correlate with that. Like, I don't know, the flooding of the Nile.
Seasonal stuff.
Yeah, the turning of the seasons. For better or worse, this got generalized so that the stars and planets supposedly had all sorts of influence upon human minds and actions and fortunes, so that back in the day, the science of astronomy was the same thing as astrology. But the plus side to this is it made us pay so much attention.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if you're going to make some... I can't cuss. You're going to make some stuff up. Yeah, you pay attention to it.
So, example of this is in 1092 AD. Mm. It's between 35 and 40 feet tall.
Okay.
Five stories of this is what the heavens are up to water clock in China.
Wow. Okay. Commitment there.
Quite a bit before medieval Europe had rediscovered clockwork.
Mm.
Or at least the... actually, when the medievals got back to doing clocks, they went to oscillators pretty quickly.
Okay.
You know, pendulums.
Yeah, yeah.
And the Virgin Foliate and other things. But that didn't happen until, like, the pendulum clock didn't get invented until Christian Huygens in 1656.
I don't want to derail you, but Virgin what?
What?
Virgin Foliate, did you
Verge
say?
Verge and Foliate.
That's my fault.
I knew these words until you said things.
Yeah.
You threw me off. I didn't say a word about a virgin.
Remember that. I don't want to derail you, he said.
Liar!
But I'm so good at it. Anyways.
All right, I'm going to look at my notes here as if someone had distracted me. All right, so that was in China.
Okay.
In... good old Baghdad, the Islamic Empire.
Mm-hmm.
There was a device called a Zyrja, or a I haven't been able to find out much about it.
Okay.
But it was apparently a semi-mechanical divination tool.
Ooh.
From some of the descriptions, it sounds almost like an automated database lookup. But I can't be sure. It's talking about entering the star and its azimuth and its orbit and, you know, parameters.
Yeah, yeah.
And then reading off of the charts, blah, 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 blah.
Okay.
So, there's that. Something else I read about it made it sound like it was semi-random or even entirely random. Like a bunch of balls would bounce around and land on places.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I don't really know. But this apparently influenced a medieval scholar who has the unbelievably glorious name of, wait for it, Illuminius Ramon Lull.
Italian?
His name's Illuminius. Actually, he was from Catalan, islands outside of Spain.
Oh, okay.
A Catalina, oh, I guess.
Okay, that supports it too, because there was two cultures I could think of where they're big on very large names. I went the wrong way. Oh, that's...
Okay, so this guy was a Christian apologist, and I don't mean he ran around saying, gee, we're sorry we're Christians.
That's where
I
was going, yep.
He ran around explaining Christianity to other people, and a lot of his work was cast in that manner,
mm-hmm.
including the bit we want to talk about that was apparently inspired by the Muslim tools.
Oh okay. Those divination things?
Yeah. He seems to have been one of the first ones to try and automate logic.
Okay. Computers.
Yes.
All right.
Now, this is something we haven't touched yet. We've been talking about binary and digital mm-hmm. and different number systems, all about calculating.
Yeah, yeah.
But another thing computers do is implement logic.
Which is huge. I mean, any programming task, when you start other than Hello World, let me spit text on the screen, but you need ifs, you need ands, you need these logical operators, otherwise you can't do anything.
Yeah, well, this guy, he started off, he was of the opinion that any area of knowledge could be broken down to some basic axioms.
Okay.
And then he had all sorts of symbols to indicate their relations with each other.
Okay.
I don't know what his different symbols meant. Ones that were mentioned in some of the articles I read were like, this is like that, or this is in opposition to that.
Oh, okay, yeah, logic, okay.
Yeah, one of the things he had was a paper machine, is what they call it. It's disks set upon disks, and inside the disks were lists of his alphabet, mm-hmm. which would then stand for these various principles. So you could rotate these disks around to get any combination of these things you wanted.
Okay.
And then it got complicated from there. There were trees and charts and so forth.
It's starting to get complicated already. All right.
But, yeah, I mean, he did his shtick in 1305 or 1308 when he was publishing his work on this stuff. And the reason I bring him up is because he is actually in the line of people who influenced other people.
Okay.
Which is a phenomenon or a criterion that we discussed on Monday. So we're still on computers.
Yeah, yeah.
And the history of computing. I found somebody else's timeline.
Okay.
And it's all about gadgets.
Oh, okay.
And it reminds me a little bit of when we were going through natural history.
Mm-hmm.
And like the mother fish. Oh. Some okay. extinct placoderm that is the ancestor to nothing that's alive today. But it was the first live birth we know of, complete with placenta and umbilical cord, right?
Oh, right, right.
Looking at all these devices made by this guy or that guy or that guy, and you know, fine, they were around. But are they ancestral to what eventually became the computer? You know what I'm saying? Did it influence the same people who made the computer?
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Well, or not.
You kind of have to draw from a lot of different places. An argument could be made.
An argument could be made, but it's lame. No, yeah. Like, I guess Pascal, good old Blaise Pascal, is credited for making the first mechanical calculator.
Okay.
This is unlikely in the extreme, because there were mechanics around and people who wanted to calculate things.
Yeah.
But the first we know of. And then somebody finds that this other guy, William somebody or another, had made an automatic abacus. Straight up, here's the abacus, here's a little motor to run it.
Okay.
And he was getting, okay, well, it's him then. Except the next guy to tackle it, Leibniz, who did some of the theoretical work too,
mm-hmm.
was not influenced by Mr. Otto Abacus. He was influenced by Pascal.
Okay.
So if you're going to follow the chain of who influenced whom,
mm-hmm.
it's different.
He just wanted to put every gadget on there.
And it's sort of hard to find. It's the Swiss Army knife of advocates. following the thread of the thoughts is even harder, because everybody makes a timeline of the devices. I did actually find it, right?
Mm-hmm.
A thread of where the thoughts are going. But I'm at the stage right now where I really need to dig into it more before I share it.
Okay. So,
yeah.
So it's Monday. We got nothing.
Yeah. right, so let's get back to the fall of Constantinople. That was in 1453.
Okay.
Istanbul, Constantinople.
Yeah. We don't sing.
Then we drove a bunch of scholars over towards Western Europe, just as Western Europe had discovered their own version of the movable type printing press. And, cheap paper. So all of those elements come together.
Well, now we can think on now, paper.
Yes, and we enter a curious part of medieval history where whatever they read from the classics, you know, Greece, Rome, and so forth, was semi-worshipped.
Oh, okay.
And deviations were not allowed.
Oh, okay.
Take the Dr. Galen from Rome.
Okay.
Who was a pioneer and all about the scientific method, although he never quite put it that way, for being a surgeon and a doctor.
Okay.
But the medieval scholars, who, unlike Galen, were all about dissecting corpses.
Okay.
If they saw things that contradicted what Galen had said, they'd either ignore it or explain it away.
Wait, so they're actually looking in the bodies?
Yes.
And if it contradicts what he said?
Yeah, they'd say it's an artifact of putrefaction, or this guy had an unusual anatomy, or you grow this little gland right after you die. It's just a thing.
Okay. Well, many mistakes were made.
Over time, this changed, this attitude that it must be as it was recorded.
Mm-hmm.
And people started to question such things, starting the scientific revolution.
Aha.
And people argue about the date of this, but you got to pick a date. How about 1543,
okay,
when Nicholas Copernicus published his work about the heliocentric universe.
Aha.
The sun's in the center instead of the earth.
Ooh, rebel. All right. Sounds like a good date.
That is a good date. Meanwhile, another guy picked up that particular torch. His name was Galileo.
Oh, him. Oh, hey.
Yes. And
there's a song about
Galileo was rather strongly influenced by Lull.
Uh-huh.
There was a Scottish fellow, John Navier.
It's always the Scots. Okay, yeah. They invented golf.
He seems to have more or less invented logarithms.
If you ask a Scot, they invented everything. Anyway.
He started his work in the late 1500s, published in 1614, and he was mostly concerned with ways of simplifying calculations.
Okay.
And he found lots of tricks you can do with logarithms in order to simplify calculations.
Well, that's valuable, yeah.
Yes, and then the next thing he did was publish the translation of the title was something like On Divining Rods.
Okay.
Right, but he wasn't using these for divination. He had rods printed with various multiplication tables that he'd lay against on a board that had 1 through 9 printed out on the side.
Okay.
It was a very complicated abacus called Navier's Bones.
Ooh, okay.
I don't know if it was even that complicated. It is a forerunner to the slide rule.
I see the... Okay, yeah, I see the hocus pocus reference, like On Dividing Rods, because everybody else is like, what is happening? You know what I mean? No, man, it's simple.
No. Bones. What's the matter with you?
It all makes sense.
It's simple. Right, so we actually mentioned this guy in Monday. Oh. William Schickard. In 1623, tried to make Napier's bones automatic and mechanical.
Uh-huh.
And largely failed.
But at least he tried. I don't know.
The next guy we get is Pascal. Oh, Blaise Pascal.
Mm-hmm.
And he was working in the mid-1600s.
Mm-hmm.
He published some of the work on his calculating machine in 1642.
No.
His dad was a tax official
Huh.
in charge of an entire city, and he often sort of roped his poor boy, Blaise, into helping with all this tedious mathematical work. As you can imagine, that's a bit of a motivation to come up with some sort of automatic calculating machine.
Yeah, yeah. This is his passion already. And he's, mundane work. I can just, let me make this take 2 seconds so I can be done with it. Yeah.
Yeah, so his machine was pretty good. I guess it had some trouble with carries.
Uh-huh.
And
that's an issue.
unlike the previous guy who like made the one prototype and it didn't work, and then he hardly even told anyone he tried, and slunk away in defeat and shame. Blaise Pascal had at least 50 different prototypes. He kept working and refining that thing.
See, that, yeah, motivation, or not motivation, determination.
Yes. Blaise Pascal influenced Leibniz.
Okay.
Leibniz, that's his name.
Leibniz, sounds good, yeah.
Gottfried Wilhelm. Leibniz was influenced by Pascal, and Lull, and Giordano Bruno, and Galileo Galilei.
See, there's paper in a printing press.
Yes. Yeah. he had giants upon whose shoulders he could stand.
Aha. We've arrived.
Yes.
You know?
And Leibniz, amongst other things, independently came up with calculus about the same time Isaac Newton did. And by all accounts, Isaac Newton was not happy about the situation.
You've got spies or something. Who knows?
But another thing Leibniz talked about was binary.
Oh, hey.
He realized that if all you have are two symbols, 0 and 1, mechanical calculators become much easier to construct. He even outlined one using marbles.
Oh, yeah, which is an elegant way to demonstrate binary.
Yeah, and there was either marbles and little chutes and rods to push them about. Like, for example, if it was a 1, the hole would be open and a marble would drop through.
Mm-hmm.
If it was a 0, well, it wouldn't.
There's a marble in the way.
And he talks about shifting it left or right, just like the left or right shift bit manipulation thingies.
Yeah, programmers.
And using an accumulator to add them all up, so there it is.
All the elements are there.
Yes. I keep running into these articles that say he also talked about binary for logic, but I can't find it. It doesn't mean it isn't true, just that I failed. But he was very much into logic. He was a logician.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, which is somebody who does logic. Hey, hey.
Hey, yeah. Logicians will tell you that they invented math.
Just like the Scottish. Yeah. It's true. Leibniz also made a calculating machine using our old base 10-ness.
Hey, okay.
And he was using gears so that one gear would have a ratio of 1 to 10.
Oh, nice.
So you turn around the 1 units so that it passes 10 numbers. It's back to 0, and the next one over has gone up 1.
Complicated. I mean, not complicated. I'm just thinking about how do they whittle the gears?
And actually, he's got a lot of papers on how to figure out gear ratio. His design actually was picked up a couple of centuries later and mass produced. In fact, in order to get to the part where we're mass producing calculating machines, we have to get past the invention of the steam engine.
Okay.
And the Industrial Revolution. But we'll talk about that
okay
next time. See you then.
Bye.